wanted to start with some pictures here. And these are very familiar pictures that we've seen in the media over the last couple weeks in Southern California. But there are always stories that don't make the media. And while these are very common scenes that we saw on television, what wasn't really presented were the disparities that the fires exposed. You heard a lot that fires were indiscriminate, that they burned, actually they burned more wealthy homes and upper middle class homes, because as opposed to some of our developing countries, where the poor are up on the hill and have the scenic views, the shanty towns of Lima, of São Paulo, are the homes with the views, you know, creeping up the mountainside. Here in the U.S., it's the opposite. So we had a lot of beautiful homes, and a lot of the media focus on the Malibu fires, for example. And while that was a smaller fire, we had much bigger fires happening in our mountain area right next to Loma Linda that did not get the same attention. But what I really wanted to point out about the fires was, although it was a disaster for everybody, our school districts in the area closed down for about a week during the fires. And if you can picture Loma Linda, universities in Loma Linda, California, right next to us is Redlands, California. And our railroad tracks are the I-10 freeway. You cross that I-10 freeway and you have a whole different socioeconomic reality and picture. So while the Redlands School District closed, that was a vacation for the kids in most of the Redlands District. In San Bernardino, when the schools closed, it was a disaster. And why is this? Because most of the schools in the city of San Bernardino have an average of 98% of children that are qualified for school lunches and breakfasts. So that means that a vast majority of these families are below the federal poverty level. So what happened when these kids, whose only meal was at school, or meals, breakfast and lunch, were left without school? We started seeing hordes of children and families going to places that usually the homeless would line up for free lunches. So it was a real calamity in the area, and it really exposed the differences and the disparities that we have in our communities. Now, what we're going to present today is really focused on disparities, on partnerships, and on the community action model that we've found has been very useful, a model that works for both partners. And this is a partnership between Loma Linda University, an academic partner, and the Latino Health Collaborative, a community-based partner. Okay, we've talked about the social inequalities, and I just wanted to mention that about the disparities in the school districts. But there's also economic structures that are very different. In the area of San Bernardino, we had three major employers. The last employer closed down in 1995, which was the Norton Air Force Base. When Norton closed, there was a mass exodus from the area, and those who stayed behind were often found jobless. There's also Kaiser Steel and the railroad. So we see a city with a history of blue-collar workers and then a lack of jobs. Now, the current city council is quite proud of new jobs moving into the area. But what they're not telling you is that a lot of these jobs are bringing their own workers. And the other thing is that the jobs don't match the skill set of the community. So we have high-level jobs for a community that's used to working in the service sector. the community action model focuses on these health issues. It also focuses on community capacity building. And this is really focusing on leadership development at the community level. It's also asset-based, so a lot of us are very familiar with that instead of going in and looking at the deficits of the community, which is very easy. And it's something that we always talk to our students about. Loma Linda University is a private, faith-based institution. So I always tell our students, you run the risk of coming here from all over the country and a lot of international students and never seeing the realities of our region if you don't step out into the community and really get engaged. We could have students in our programs, if it weren't for community-engaged scholarship activities, they could go back home and never really see the entire picture of our region. And for these students, the first impression, of course, is, you know, what the communities don't have. They don't have the same kind of grocery stores. They don't have the same kind of lighting. They don't have the parks and safe spaces. But the challenge is to really have them look at what are the assets and how these communities survive despite the lack of resources and despite the attention that they deserve from the local government. And really looking at community mobilization is a key component. The community, as you all know, is sick and tired of being assessed. The needs assessment fatigue is very real. But we continue to teach needs assessments, and we continue to need places for our students to practice these skills. So the community action model actually helps us go beyond the assessment and really step into the action phase and take the assessment, not that is done on the community, but that is done with the community. And I'm going to explain a little bit more about that. The critical analysis portion is very important. And just to give you a little bit of a picture of San Bernardino County, it's a 20,000 square mile county. It's the largest county in the main United States, and it has about 1.9 million people, so it's not as populous as LA County, for example, but it's a huge county. Now, about 2.5 years ago, First Five San Bernardino approached our School of Public Health and wanted us to do a county-wide needs assessment. And we said, oh no, another needs assessment. We know what the community is going to say about this. So we really turned to the community action model. And you're going to have this graph here in your handouts. I'm not going to spend a lot of time with the graph, but I do want to give a little bit of background about this model. And it really comes from Paulo Freire's teachings on engaging community members about their experience and really focusing on a dialogue with our community. Now, that might sound a bit trivial, a dialogue with our community. What does that really mean, to dialogue with our community members and partners? And we might say this a lot, but how often do we really dialogue? We're so caught up a lot of times with grants, with academic deadlines, but how do we make time for that dialogue? And do our grants really stem from the dialogue, or do we get grants and then try to initiate a dialogue? And that's really one of the biggest challenges that I find in reversing that order. We should have the partnership. We should have that dialogue with the community. And then the grants will come from that. Because it's not just what we're prescribing for the community, but what the community is involved in diagnosing and in prescribing. There are 5 steps in the community action model. The very first step is one that we started with when the First Five asked us to do the needs assessment, was to train participants. And as I mentioned, the county is so large that it has really very different communities. We have the Central Valley, we have the East Valley, we have the West Valley, we have the High Desert, which is up to going towards Las Vegas, Victorville, completely different, even weather and climate. We have the desert, which is out in 29 Palms near Palm Springs. They were actually surprised that we even went out that far. Said nobody ever wants to come out here. And within that desert community, you also have a diversity of military families from the 29 Palms base, the Marine base out there. You have Latino families that are working in the service sector. And then you have your desert rats, you know, your typical desert people that have just lived out there forever and are a very unique subculture as well. So what did we do? We partnered with, we divided all these regions into six different regions. One was the, also the one I didn't mention was the mountain area where the fires were. And then we partnered with community-based organizations in those regions, and we asked them to help us identify community people that could be part of the community action teams, or CATs. And these community action teams were then, once they were recruited, the core group, they were asked to recruit other members from their community, and then the participants were trained in doing interviews and conducting focus groups with our research assistants as well. And this was a training that happened with community grassroots people and also the community-based organization staff. So that was the first part, the recruitment, interview training, focus group, and then we went on to the community diagnosis, going out and conducting these interviews and focus groups. And then the third section is really analyzing each area, in each region, analyzing the results of these interviews and focus groups. And it was fascinating to see how people responded to this and how their involvement in the process was empowering, and it was empowering us as well. So each area chose a specific action to tackle. So prioritizing the needs and then really addressing some of these needs. We found that in one region, most of the participants had a language barrier and language isolation issue. They identified parenting in a culturally appropriate way as their priority. These families felt that coming from Latin American countries and the tradition for child discipline was mostly corporal punishment. And now their kids were not only learning English, which faster than they were, and the power shift in the family was really quite dramatic, but now the kids were threatening to call 911 if they were touched. Okay. So when we had these discussions and focus groups, all the parents agreed that this was a major problem. And they felt like the only tool that they had to discipline was being taken away, and now they had absolutely no discipline in the family. So that was a real key thing. Some of the other, another community had, these were new homeowners up in the High Desert, and because they had bought their new first home, they could only afford one car. Now the breadwinner would use that car to go to work, leaving usually the wife and the kids at home without any transportation. So access to health care and to other services was a crucial problem there. So what happened after these things were identified? Every CAT community action team identified an action plan with their community-based organization. Now the fifth step, as you can see, is enforce and maintain the action. It's always easy to start programs. It's always easy to start activities. But how do you sustain this? And I think that's where the big question lies, is, you know, how are we going to keep this this initiative sustainable? And I'll let my colleague Edward McFeel take it from here.
Thank you, Professor Belliard. My name is Edward McField, at whom I'm known as Eduardo, coming from a long history in Latin America. As Professor Belliard has pointed out, one of the key lessons learned throughout this process has been the reconfirmation of the need to identify specific contexts within the community. We cannot attempt to provide blanket solutions to everyone, even if they share a similar county. In our experience, we saw that having six very distinct regions was key to identify specific interventions or programs. And how else could we understand the community if and work towards solving and the health disparities if we don't understand the community? Understanding their context, their experiences, how they explain disease, what are some of the explanatory models for disease and preventing disease. Furthermore, we found that oftentimes the community's concept of health was quite different from that of the academic partner. And today I'm actually representing the Latino Health Collaborative. Professor Belliard could have mentioned that San Bernardino County, having almost 2 million residents, 60% of those are Latino or identify themselves as Hispanics. And so they also bring a unique perspective of health issues and how they understand the barriers to health promotion. How are we to improve the healthcare if we don't understand some of the barriers to service provision, language, transportation? And so we feel and we learned that the community action model actually provides a very effective way in understanding and defining strategies to assess and to provide solutions to health disparities. But it's not only important to have an understanding of the issues. How do you get close to the community? How do you actually incorporate the community's voice in the finding of solutions? And so we have followed the seed scale model, bottom up dimensions and top down, outside in, as you can see on the table. In our context, the grassroots community represents the Latino community in San Bernardino. We also have incorporated CBO, the community-based organization, with a policy perspective, and as the outside-in expertise being provided by the Loma Linda University. And some of the key characteristics of these partnerships, you are probably familiar with the community campus partnerships for health principles, ensuring that we have a combined and shared vision and mission, and transparency in the process. Like it was mentioned earlier, sometimes the grants are obtained, or we are trying to respond to an RFA, and so at that moment is when we attempt to develop coalitions. But it's very important to have these partnerships in place, and it also provides an opportunity for campus engagement with the community, and allows us in the community to develop our leadership base. And I guess this is the part that you are mostly interested in. What are the advantages of this approach? And without any particular preferences in the order, definitely there's a funding potential. As you know, many of the current opportunities require a coalition, collaboration, partnerships. It also provides the university and ourselves as a community a flexible funding mechanism. Sometimes our universities are quite structured and stringent requirements, which by having a community-based partnership, some of these unflexibilities in the structure can be bypassed. And of course, it provides us in the community an opportunity for enhancing our research base, a credibility in the process, having both the academic and the community involved. And so as we reflect on our experience, we can ascertain that community academic partnerships can be effective ways to address health disparities. Finding a model that is mutually acceptable and mutually beneficial for both partners or for all partners involved. Furthermore, the community action model is a useful tool for getting the partners to the table. Sometimes we found that either the academic side or the community don't have the experience or the perhaps even the political will to get together and to design strategies to solve health disparities or any other social effects that they may be experiencing. So the community action model provides a solution in that sense. And finally, communities must be involved in identifying health priorities. If it ought to be effective and furthermore sustainable, we must be at the table with academic partners in defining the future. We, as Professor Belliard has pointed out, the needs assessment fatigue and other sometimes unpractical ways of engaging in research sometimes affect the community's desire to participate, but the community action model provides that incentive for the community to be brought on in any research project that attempts to solve health disparities. Thank you very much. We're sure you don't have any questions, but we have 2 minutes to entertain them.
Yeah, this was the actual training part was done by our colleague, Dr. Susanna Montgomery, and she was unable to be here with us, but we were actually focusing on the partnership and then what we're going to be doing. When we submitted the abstract for this, we had received a grant, a follow-up grant from First Five to do this same program, the same evaluation in the Latino community. And because of some political issues, the whole grant was pulled. And that's another story. I think we're going to do a presentation on that next year. So unfortunately, we were unable to really follow up with what we wanted to present this morning. And this was done by another colleague earlier. So I don't have the specifics of what exactly the methods were for that. Yeah, no, that part I do know. I don't know if you're familiar with the KPC model, where the community partners come together and you actually do the tallying and method with flip charts. I know that was done, and this was done more as a kind of town hall meetings were conducted as well. Yeah. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.